All right. Welcome back to Music's on the Menu. Coming at you live from UBC campus in Vancouver on the traditional and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish peoples. I am your host, Hugh Dana. Unfortunately, my normal co-host, Alex Bird, is fighting crime today. He's on jury duty, so I'm going to try something a little new today. Joining me from the faraway mystical lands known as the San Fernando Valley are my two brothers. So we're going to try this a little differently. Hopefully they sound okay. But so my two brothers, Frank, say hello.
Hey, how's it going?
And Arden. Arden is there, but he is...
Morning, all.
There he is. There's Arden. So Frank and Arden. So I'm glad you guys can hear them. This is going to be really fun. Unfortunately, Bird isn't here, and we didn't really plan for him to not be here. So this is kind of on the cuff. I wanted to try something new. Obviously, coming from a family of musicians, my brothers have a depth of knowledge, probably quite deeper than mine. And we're going to have some fun today. So today is Thursday, April 20th. It's 4:20, guys. Happy 4:20.
Happy 4:20.
Yeah, so last week we got some pretty big singles. I know, Frank, you were looking forward to some of these. We got Chemical from Post Malone. We got the Doja Cat remix of Kill Bill. Dom Fike returns with Dancing in the Courtroom. Ice Spice comes back with the Nicki Minaj feature, which is probably big news. Marshmello and Farruko, who are two big-time DJs. We had NLE Choppa. We got some stuff from Youngboy and Kodak. I think Louis Capaldi's final signal. So we got some really, really... there's a lot of meat to bite into here. Hopefully you can't hear that, but I bet you can. Anyways, what did you guys think? I think we'll start with Post Malone, because I think we all thought that was our favorite,
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. And he just seems like he's having so much fun making music. Like, there's like a palpable joy to the music that he's making. And this song, it's just like a wistful and whimsical summer jam. It's really good. I really, really like it.
Mm. Arden?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think what Frank's saying is true. I think he's very inspired. His songs are always great. The writing's always great. I thought that was a good song, start to finish, and it was really enjoyable. And I would say that it's my favorite. And yeah, it's a really inspired thing. You can see that he can hear the joy of music in all of his material and releases.
Yeah, and I know, Frank, you and I were, I mean, it almost seemed like his last record, 12 Karat Toothache, it didn't seem as big as maybe Beer Bongs and Bentleys or Hollywood's Bleeding. It didn't have like enormous smash hits like Circles or Rockstar, but I know you and I really loved it. And you and I were kind of talking about like, well, Post Malone has kind of reached the apex of his pop form. The linear trajectory, he's kind of reached the apex. And we were talking like, I'm not sure Post Malone can do another record with like largely pop. But then he comes out with this sound, and you and I talked about how, oh, him and Andrew Watt and Louis Bell and Billy Walsh, like they can do kind of whatever they want. They're all kind of geniuses. So we were like, oh, I wonder if they'll go the country route or maybe he'll dip back into hip hop. But they actually kind of stayed somewhat in the pop lane, but this still sounds fresh, and it's definitely a summer song.
100%. And I think that I think Post will continue to sort of interpolate his kind of early 2000s indie rock influences, right? Because I'm 25. He's like a couple of years older than me. And so the stuff that he grew up on is like, vaguely similar to the stuff that I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he will just continue to sort of really mine the vein of Fleet Foxes and Pavement and Neutral Milk Hotel and the sort of fun indie rock of that era. And this song really feels like his version of that thing, which is, in my humble opinion, a great thing. It's a great sound. It's a great era of rock music. So yeah, I think for him continuing to explore guitar music, it'll be fun to hear. And especially if he's going to continue to roll out singles over this sort of summer period we're heading into. That'll be really fun because this song is just a jam.
Yeah, this is a really good song. And I'm glad that, so it came out 1 week ago, and because like I'm actively looking at like streams and stuff, this song has 17 million streams in 1 week, which is really good, dude.
It's impressive.
And the mainstream music is always better when Posty's in it, man. So
it's true.
Speaking of Posty, this weekend was Coachella, and Post Malone did come out. Yeah. He was strumming on the guitar with Bad Bunny.
Right.
Now, obviously, Coachella's a legendary, I think we just need to briefly mention it, legendary LA festival. Big acts such as Metro Boomin brought out all those people. I wasn't able to be there, but I enjoyed it via live stream. Metro Boomin's act was awesome. Dom Fike put on a show. We'll talk about Dom Fike later. Labyrinth, yep. Man, he finally showed up in the desert and he killed it. Frank Ocean's return to the stage after 6 years, controversial, but still mesmerizing.
I was reading an article, just the only note that I have on that. I was reading an article about the city of Indio and the agreement that they have with the festival is that once you go past curfew, they fine you $20,000 after 5 minutes and $1,000 every 60 seconds after that.
Do you know what the curfew is?
I think the main issue with Frank Ocean's set is that it started late. Like, it started at 11, and the curfew on Sunday night in Indio is midnight. But on Saturday and Friday,
it's
1 o'clock in the morning. Okay. So if they had given... If Frank Ocean was the Saturday night headliner, he could have played a full 2 hours because he was on the stage at 11 p.m., right?
Mm-hmm.
So that really was the issue at hand. Everyone I know that was there and everybody that I think saw the songs, saw his sort of new interpretations of songs like White Ferrari and Pink and White, really liked them. The issue at hand seemed to be he didn't play for a long enough amount of time.
Yes, I that's correct. Mm. And there is, I mean, everything else is on the, like, I don't think there's any point in us touching on everything else that happened because it's already out there and like people have their opinions formed already. So we'll leave that as be. But so we'll go back to Dom Fike because the Dom Fike set was very impressive. And so much, I mean, actually, I'm pretty sure Drake actually reposted it, which is...
He did,
which
yeah,
is kind of random.
Posted on his Instagram story. Well,
because yeah. I mean, I guess they're in totally different veins. But what did you guys think of this new Dom Fike single, "Dancing in the Courtroom"? I really like it.
Arden, what do you think?
All right, Frank. Arden is. We'll say that. Oh yeah, look at him. He's got bad internet. Okay, so. So, Frank, you and I can quickly have this discussion because you and I love Dom Fike. You put me on to Dom Fike, oh, man, years ago, probably 2018.
I first heard Dom Fike in the Don't Forget About Me demos on SoundCloud, which is quite a while ago. But the new single I like, I'm somewhat confused as to the political message of it. Maybe you can enlighten me. Because just from the lyrics, I get the idea that, like, okay, he's sort of talking about generally kind of political corruption. But as to sort of the exact aim of the song, I can't say. So maybe you can enlighten me on that front, just in terms of sort of what he's looking to accomplish lyrically. Because I can't say, but obviously the melody and the production is awesome. So,
I mean... The political corruption part I got too. Now, I remember when you introduced me to Dom Fike, you were like, yo, dude, you should check this guy out. Like, he's like this indie, like, white rocker guy, but he also has, like, multiple felonies. I remember you said that, and I was like, and his music is just so, so cool. And Dom Fike is one of those guys who he blew up off the Don't Forget Me. Right? That's what they're called, right? Don't Forget Me Now.
Don't Forget About Me.
Yeah.
And then the demo versions came out on SoundCloud and kind of made the rounds.
And then he released
people
it on
really
Spotify.
Liked them. And then he re-released them in a sort of more polished form. And then they went, I mean, three nights went ridiculous streaming-wise. And then he put his album out,
And I love that album. I really, really enjoy it. I believe it's called What Could Possibly Go Wrong.
What Could Possibly Go Wrong, yes.
I thought that was a great record. Like, I thought for the hype that ended up, like, surrounding it, because he did a few interviews. I want to say it's his debut record.
It is his debut record,
I thought it was... I mean, it's all over the place, but it's still awesome. It's still a lot of fun.
His, I don't know if you saw particularly the performance of Why, which is a song off that album.
I love Coachella, that song.
The Why performance at Coachella. His voice is remarkable. Like, his ability to sort of to sing like in this really bluesy way, and then to kind of like move up really high into his head in like this Mick Jagger way. And sort of the balance that he has between those two parts of his voice is remarkable. But the Why, I felt particularly, was just an unbelievable vocal performance from this weekend. But yeah, I mean, he's amazing. And obviously aesthetically, his stuff is so interesting always.
Yeah, and he's on Euphoria now, which is dope.
He's an actor.
Acting career.
Yeah, so, I'm interested to see sort of the next sort of rollout and record from him.
Me
for
too.
Sure.
And back to your point on, like, what maybe the true dialogue was for Dancing in the Courtroom, I assumed maybe, and I didn't, like, look too deeply into it because I was kind of wrapped up in Post Malone, but I assumed it had to do with him beating his court cases or just his
experience. That was my thought, too.
Yeah, just his experience in the courtroom.
Right.
Maybe him being like the jurors knowing who he is eventually and stuff like that. But it's still an awesome song. Now the other song I think that we all wanted to touch on was Luis Capaldi's fourth single, Wish You the Best, which is just like totally him in his bag. It's just like an absolute heart-wrenching power ballad, pop power ballad.
Right. I think Arden actually had some things to say about that.
Yeah, Arden.
Well, yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
I was
go ahead, man.
Say, I think he's an incredible singer. I think he's a great vocalist. And I think the songs are good, you know. They really speak for themselves. The lyrics are good too. But he's, the power he has in that voice is really compelling. And I thought it was strong. I like simple songs too. They're just a piano and a voice. I mean, it doesn't get much simpler than that. Kind of how Post Malone kind of started his career too, is doing Bob Dylan covers with the guitar and the voice. So I think there's a lot to be said about the simplicity of that. And I thought it was great. And that's what it's got to be. You got a good melody, good lyric, good song when it's just in that form and you're doing something right. So I thought it was really great. I think he's usually great.
Yeah, he is usually great. And I know, Frank, you wanted to touch on how he's kind of shifting away. We'll touch on like how I think that we both think he's kind of shifting away from this guy who obviously his last record, which I want to say is like divinely uninspired
a hellish extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an explosive. I mean, I'm pretty sure Someone You Loved has close to 3 billion streams. It's like he shows up and he explodes. And his next record, which I believe comes out in May, is going to probably be quite similar. I bet that, I mean, Alex and I talk a lot about, so kind of why I'm bringing this up is Alex and I talk a lot about the evolution of artists and like what we like in albums. And I think that he can probably still, because he was gone so long, he can probably still come back and just slam and just make smash hits off of those kind of like breakup power ballads. But you and I briefly were talking about how he had him and Matty Healy of the 1975, who we don't give enough love to on this show, so we'll have Frank give some 1975 love to this show, how they met up and how we think that is going to kind of diversify his, what is the word for his catalog? Diversify his catalog.
100%. I think Matty Healy is... controversial as he may be, one of the great songwriters of our era for sure, and he has gone on the record and said, "Hey, look, I have these songs with Capaldi we wrote together. I love them." And then Capaldi has come out and said, "I love them too, and they're so weird." That's the word that he always uses to describe them. He spoke about these songs on multiple platforms and he said they're so weird. And so for me, I, as a huge 1975 fan, am super excited to hear them because I want to hear Louis Capaldi sort of in the Matty Healy vein. And I also want to hear Louis Capaldi get weird. I want to hear the diversification of his sound, sort of the sound that he's going to grow into. So, yeah, I'm super excited to hear those songs. I think that there's going to be some really, really cool. There's going to be some really cool moments in those songs.
Yeah, and I know that I remember one time you told me that. Or whenever someone says weird and it has to do with Matty Healy, it's always seems to be in a good connotation of the word. Like Matty Healy's weird is always like eccentric but dynamic, and it's and like some of the 1975 songs, like they're all over the place. But like I'm trying to think of one that's just kind of just like weird, but it's still so good. Like.
I mean, Love It If We Made It is a great example of a song that has a very unconventional structure, but is just a serious pop tune at its core.
Yeah, right? I'm thinking songs like Shiny Collarbone, which is almost just like a little house beat.
Yeah, or, that's a great song too.
What Should I Say, which is also almost on a house beat, but he puts like this classic...
I love that song.
Just like this classic, like yearning pop vocal on it. And it's just like, it would be considered weird, but it's still so catchy, man. Now, obviously you and I, for those who haven't put together now, Frank has pretty much introduced me to 90% of the music I listen to today.
An older brother does.
Yes. Including the 1975. Yeah. So him and I obviously have many conversations, but there is no artist we'll briefly transition this. We'll play Chemical right real quick. But there's no artist that you've shown me that we discuss more than Drizzy Drake.
Yeah, I don't think there is. I think the undisputed topic of conversation for you and I has always been Mr. Graham.
Yes. So we'll take a quick break here. We'll play Chemical because I really want to play Chemical because it's such a cool song. That's and so then we'll good. Come back and we'll have a classic Dan and Bros conversation on Mr. Aubrey Grant. And Arden, I'm sure you have some awesome takes coming up. Some awesome takes. So we're going to play Chemical here. I'm going to play Chemical here. We'll get some good show promos going and then we'll come back and we'll talk about our man Drake. So this is Chemical by Post Malone, his newest single.
Sitting around waiting for the world to end. Heavy Metal Radio, bringing you the best metal for over 30 years on CITR. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3.
The NCRA is excited to bring back the podcast school from March 7th to April 13th. Twice a week for 6 weeks, we will be hosting online classes that will be recorded and shared with participants. Classes will cover various podcast-related topics such as the basics, what defines a podcast, and how to be a representative. Visit podcast.ncra.ca to register and learn more about the courses and their presenters.
All right, and we are back.
Alrighty.
We're back.
Such a great tune, dude.
I love that song, man. I mean, I'm a big Post Malone guy. Always will be.
Same.
But now we'll switch over to Drizzy Drake. Now, maybe for some context here. So Frank and I are just music lovers. We've grown around music. Arden is the music maker here. He's the one who makes music. So I want to get your favorite Drake song. I want to hear your first hear just a few words you think on Drake, and then your favorite Drake song.
Well, I admire Drake's production. I think they're clean sounding records. Of course, as anything that popular should be. I really liked the record with Passion Fruit. It influences me. That record that was probably my favorite from start to finish of his. I wouldn't say I'm a Drake super fan like you guys, but I do admire the music. It's not something I would listen to, perhaps like a lot, that Lewis Capaldi, tune you're discussing or something like that, or the 1975. But yeah, I do admire it, for various reasons, as you guys do as well.
What are those reasons?
Well, I think I said the production's always great. I mean, they're really crisp sounding records. I mean, they really are the gold standard for that. And I really think that when it comes to a sonic quality, there's something to be said about that. I mean, think about how far we've come in the last 20 years, the last 10 years, streaming CDs and all that. So when you hear something like that, when the bass is pumping and the vocals are perfectly produced, it's just really satisfying, I'd say. So I like that. It's like a treat on the ears to hear something such as that.
100%.
Yeah. Now, Frank, obviously you and I, as Arden stated, we're Aubreys. I consider myself an Aubrey. I love Drake.
Me too, yeah, for sure.
So Drake is going on his... So I guess we should start with Taylor Swift. She's currently touring her Eras Tour.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like the biggest tour since, as Arden mentioned the other day, since Springsteen would go out there and kind of just rock all night long.
Yeah, I think Taylor Swift is doing 45 songs. It's like a 3-hour and 15-minute set, and there are like costume changes and choreography for every song. It's the greatest show on earth right now. So I'm hoping to snag tickets for one of the LA shows, that's for sure.
Yeah, that will definitely be an arduous process. Now,
no doubt. Yeah.
Now I assume this. She started the tour like I want to say 3 weeks ago now.
Mid-March.
I want to say it ends around the 4th of July, right? I quickly looked at the dates.
I think it ends in August because there are 5 shows in LA in August.
Whoa.
So it's a full-scale summer tour, but the thing that you and I were discussing is sort of the fact that Drake and Taylor Swift are like friendly rivals.
Yes.
In the pop sphere, twin titans of pop music.
I remember you said Drake me, is, yep. Go on.
Drake
go on.
Is going on a legacy tour, right? Drake is doing something very similar to what Taylor Swift is doing with the Eras Tour. He started it out with these shows that he played at the Apollo in New York.
Those were so good, man.
The Apollo Theater, right.
And he opens the show with sort of deeper cuts and songs that we all love from Take Care and Nothing Was the Same. And so the discussion that you and I thought that you and I have had a couple of times and we thought would be interesting here is sort of, is there something in terms of competition between the two of them? In terms of Drake sort of being a deeply competitive person, which he talks about a lot on record. And I think he's probably seeing the Eras Tour coverage and he's going, okay, I gotta like step to the plate. I gotta bring it. I gotta do, you know, 30 songs or something like that. And I think it's an interesting thing to talk about as two people that have literally dominated the pop sphere for 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah, you had mentioned that when we had quickly, when everyone was scrambling to get tickets and you and I went and checked the prices and the LA shows were like four figures. It was like over a grand. And you're like, yeah, dude, this is like the Eras Tour for men. Like this is the Drake Legacy Tour.
It is 100%.
And I mean, you and I will likely go.
Right.
Arden, you probably will not. You'll sit that one out. But I'm wondering if now it is called It's All a Blur, and the trailer for the tour was so cool, dude.
That's super cool.
It starts off with him pretty much still on Degrassi set. And then it goes up to and then it goes up to like him shooting the video with 21 Savage for Her Loss. So and those Apollo shows, like I feel like Drake fans, people who are as big Drake fans as you and I, our favorite records are usually from Take Care, Nothing Was the Same, If You're Reading This It's Too Late.
Sort of that 5-year stretch in the early 2010s where he kind of cemented his dominance.
Yeah.
For right, sure. Yeah. Because also that's, you know, for people our age, that's
the formative
it's an
years.
Extraordinarily important time developmentally. And so those are literally the records that I grew up on and you grew up on. And I think our generation kind of grew up on.
Mm-hmm. And hearing him come out to like I know you saw the intro to Over My Dead Body. It starts with his mom saying, can you keep it down in there? And then Over My Dead Body starts. And that's just like Over My Dead Body is one of my favorite Drake songs. And
it's
just
so
like
good.
The idea of hearing him play songs like Over My Dead Body and like Fireworks off of what is that record? I can't even find the Find Your Love record. Thank Me Now or Thank Me Later. Just songs like that, like Karaoke or he's on like Jungle. Like I just like the idea of that truly does get me excited to like Taylor Swift fan level excitement. Like you and I have touched on how like when Drake drops, you and I get excited. But when Taylor Swift drops, like Taylor Swift fans seem to get like way, like the excitement is like more so than other fans' bases.
I mean, the thing for me that is so incredible about Taylor Swift is not how many people love her, because the records are so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like the writing is so good. It's not surprising that she has the breadth of the fan base that she has. It's how much each individual fan loves her. That is the remarkable thing. Mm-hmm. There are no like mid-level Taylor Swift fans. Like people who are Taylor Swift fans are like seriously invested in Taylor.
They're
Swift.
Fanatical. They're fanatical.
100% in a good way. And that's an amazing thing. And she's cultivated this really fervent, passionate fan base. And I think that's an amazing thing. I think it's good for music and I think it's good for humanity to get that excited about art. Like that's the thing that I think every artist that I know, every person that really wants to make a career out of being in the arts desires.
Yeah.
Is to have that.
And my point with that is that I think the idea of me sitting or standing at the Forum and Drake coming out to Over My Dead Body or Drake playing Jungle, like it gets me that excited, man, because
yeah,
like
it's an exciting moment.
So and do I think, and back to your original question, which was do we think that he'll, I now does him going with 21 Savage, like I mean, Drake is at the level where like 21 Savage could kind of just be his opener, which is kind of crazy. It's kind of like The Weeknd taking Khalid for his opener for one of those songs or one of those.
Yeah,
things.
It's having two gigantic pop stars on the same bill.
Yeah.
But one is so much significantly larger than the other. It's really weird because they're both so big. It's absolutely a question of scope.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
And 21 might be at the peak of his powers right now. Like, this 100%. Might be, like, the Drake album obviously introduces him to many, many ears. Like for example, you probably wouldn't listen to 21 Savage, but, like,
I'm familiar with this material.
You like 21 Savage?
Well, I'm familiar with the material, but, yeah, and you hear a Drake song.
And 21 Savage is on there. And so 21 Savage has been introduced to many, and you're just an example, because I know that you listen to more, like, rock and stuff like that.
Some stuff, yes, indeed.
So I think 21 Savage is at the peak of his powers. So I'm wondering if that'll change anything. But I do hope. I mean, if the Apollo shows are any barometer, then he's going to shoot for something that's like the Eras Tour, and I think that he will, because part 100%. Of me thinks that this could be his last tour for like a while.
I don't know about that. He is a guy. He's talked a lot about sort of gracefully retiring.
Yes, I saw that video.
I also think we have to consider the fact that he's deeply competitive. Like, anyone that follows him knows about his partnership with Stake, who are an online gambling company. He's an incredibly competitive person. And I think if he feels like he's losing his edge, and I can't speak for him, but this is my thought, is that if he feels like he's losing his edge, he's going to work three times as hard. So I think that, yes, this tour is going to be gigantic, but I don't believe that this tour is by any means the end of the road for him.
Okay. That's the content we need from the Danon Brothers right there.
Yeah.
So there it is. So we're going to rejig our setup here. And I think that I think I want to play a Taylor Swift song. Now, this song is called All of the Girls You Loved Before. It was released recently, but it has the album cover of her 2019 record.
An unreleased song because she hadn't yet announced the fact that she was in a relationship with someone, which I believe she's no longer in.
Yeah,
this relationship,
it ended like actually, while she's on tour, which is kind of crazy.
Which is
she's still battling, man.
Super stressful and sad. But so this obviously should put this song on that album because she's not publicly in a relationship, and Taylor Swift's relationships tend to be kind of fodder for the paparazzi. So I completely understand why she wouldn't put the song out, but it's a beautiful song. I'm glad that we're going to listen to it.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this. The songs are usually great, so I'm looking forward to it.
And this is, her and Louis Bell. Louis Bell and Frank Dukes, man. That's like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl right there.
It is.
Right, yes.
So we're going to rejig our setup here, and we're going to listen to All of the Girls You've Loved Before, and we'll be right back. So this is Taylor Swift's newest single, All of the Girls You Loved Before.
When you think of all the late nights, lame fights over the phone, wake up in the morning with someone but feeling alone. A heart is drawn around your name in someone's handwriting, not mine. Or sneaking out into town, holding hands, just killing time. Your past and mine are parallel lines, stars all aligned, and they intertwined. And taught you the way you call me baby, treat me like a lady, all that I can say is all of the girls you loved before made you the one I've fallen for. Every dead end street led you straight to me. Now you're all I need. I'm so thankful for all of the girls you loved before. But I love you more when I think of all the makeup, fake love out on the town.
the bathroom for some dude whose name I cannot remember now. Secret jokes all alone, no one's home, 16 and wild. Or breaking up, making up, leave without saying goodbye. And just know that it's everything that made me. Now I call you baby, it's why you're so amazing. All of the girls you loved before made you the one I've fallen for. Every dead end street led you straight to me. Now you're all I need. I'm so thankful for all of the girls you loved before. But I love you more. Your mother brought you up loyal and kind. Teenage love taught you there's good in goodbye. Every woman that you knew brought you here. I wanna teach you how forever feels at the girls you loved before. Made you the one I've fallen for.
CITR 101.9 FM.
A center for ants!
What?
We're a radio station broadcasting from UBC Vancouver.
How can we be expected to teach children to learn how to read if they can't even fit inside the building?
Visit CITR.ca.
Derek, it's just a...
I don't want to hear your excuses! The center has to be at least... 3 times bigger than this.
All right, and we're back. So that was, I mean, I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan, but that song is awesome. That is a really, really good song. All right, so that was To All the Girls We Loved. I really love that song. I realize I wasn't unmuted here. I was lauding it. I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan. But I love that song. Or I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan. Like, when Taylor Swift drops, I obviously listen, and it's inevitable that I like some of her songs because, like you said, Frank, the storytelling is crazy.
I mean, yeah, she's like a novelist, and she's sort of moved into this directing space, and she's written scripts, and it'll be interesting to sort of see her take those, her kind of prodigious storytelling abilities to, like, larger formats. That will be fascinating in the next few years.
Yeah. So we got 20 minutes left here, and I thought that since you guys are guests on the show this week, and you guys, obviously we all three of us listen to enormous amounts of music, but you guys definitely have a different taste and like different genres, or your hands are in more genres than Alex and I, will say. So I just wanted you guys to, we'll have a discussion on records that you guys have enjoyed. Maybe shout out some people who usually wouldn't get some airtime on Music's on the Menu. So what have you guys been enjoying since January?
I mean, it has to be said that my favorite record this year is, the Yves Two More album.
Really?
Yeah. Like, by a long shot, I think Yves, is doing something with guitar music that is innovative and exciting and, really everything that he does is so well thought out. And so exciting as someone that enjoys music because of the aesthetics and the way that he presents his art is remarkable and really beautiful. So if you haven't heard that, I would go and listen to it. The title is like full sentence with a semicolon. It's very long, but it's going to be the newest release from him. And it's really, really good. There's also something to be said for the new Lana Del Rey record, which I love. I love Jack Antonoff.
That's Jack Antonoff?
Yes.
Yeah, so that one's what? Them. There's a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard?
Did you know that there is a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard? Another is the long title. Yes. Yeah, speaking of sentence long titles.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a great record. That's a really good record. I really enjoyed that record, actually.
It's really good. And there is the way that she's sort of, because Lana Del Rey has this sort of incredible ability to sort of self-mythologize, like to build a legend and mythology around her.
Yeah.
That's and a fantastic at the end point. Of this album, she takes a song from one of her older records called Venice Beach and sort of does like a kind of like a trappy remix of it. But it's interesting that she seems to be aware, self-aware of the like very the meta nature of the mythology around her work, and she's actively playing into it, and that's exciting as a listener,
right?
Because it's like, hey, we're all aware of it, and now you're aware of it, and that's really fun. So
yeah, that
I've loved both those records.
Fantastic insight there, man.
Yeah,
Arden. So I know that you, as someone who actively is creating music in the film space, which is a little different from what Frank and I indulge in. That you will probably be listening to older records. But what have you been enjoying this year?
Well, I listen to a great deal of classical and baroque music, things like that. But recently I've been gone back to listening to the Beatles, of course, and like guys like Stevie Wonder. Just, yeah, I mean, of course, those are aged records, but I still find myself going back to that stuff. When I hear songs like In My Life, I mean, I wonder why I even try, because these just songs are so incredible and so unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, they just touch so many people. And that's what I was saying. That's like what I was mentioning with Louis Capaldi. I mean, like songs like that, or Blackbird, or Let It Be, are just a piano and a voice, or a guitar and a voice. And that, just that, has the power to really transcend. So I think that something like that is going to be really powerful. And when you have a guy like Stevie Wonder, where, I mean, he's just so iconic, that the records, what is it, 4 or 5 decades they've survived. I really think there's a lot to be said about that. And I think there's a few people that are going to be like that from this generation. I think Capaldi will be one of them. I mean, with somebody you loved. I mean, that's just such a massive success. It's just so enormous. I think Taylor Swift will be like that.
Yeah.
And her production team and all of them too. And if you guys have a few more to mention,
yeah, Alex and I have actually because obviously, like, growing up with our father, who's also in the same line of work as Arden, we are like we were just kind of force fed like classic rock. So we grew up on the 80s, and Alex and I have had this conversation like who is going to be like maybe the Led Zeppelin or like the Journey of this era, and like, I would love to get your guys' take on this. People, we've concluded that Taylor Swift, likely Bruno Mars, Drake, give or take, like, he's huge.
I think it'll be Drake.
I think
it'll be Drake.
I think Drake is in the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way that, like, I just think the numbers are so insane. Like, even if you aren't a huge fan of the music,
well, yeah, absolutely.
The numbers are just remarkable. And there has to be something said for that. The Weeknd.
Oh yeah, of course, man.
The 1975, absolutely.
You think so? I love that. I love timeless, that show.
Well, in terms of timeless music that could have been made any time in the last 40 years, I think the 75.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Mm-hmm. You know, the songs are just so good, and it all just really works on every level. So yeah, those would be like mine for music that I guess our generation will be like showing our kids.
I wanted to actually briefly touch on The Weeknd in a little bit, because he did something that I haven't actually seen in possibly a long time, where he debuted a song live, and you instantly knew it was incredible. Like, he debuted that song at Coachella, and Arden, I don't know if you would have heard it, but Frank, I know you heard it, and it was unbelievable. And I think that, now obviously, like, I know that both of you guys use Spotify, so you guys are both well aware that The Weeknd is currently sitting at like 115 million monthly listeners or something. Like, just an absolutely unheard of, absolutely unheard of number. And And we're kind of expecting that Don FM and After Hours, or like he's kind of mentioned that this is like a trilogy and this final one will kind of be the end of the trilogy. So I just wanted to, and that's just kind of, I want to open up the floor to kind of a broader question is like, what albums or what music that are you guys looking forward to in the next months or just before Christmas time?
Ooh.
And nothing needs to be confirmed, or it's just someone that maybe you haven't heard of for a long time you would love some music from.
I mean, the new Ed Sheeran album's out in like 2 weeks, and that's going to be a whole
Oh, I love Ed Sheeran, man.
May 5th. That's going to be incredible. Jessie Ware, who I've loved since high school, but I don't feel like gets enough love. She puts an album out in like 8 days. It's going to be so, so good. And then obviously this Capaldi record, which has another incredible sentence long title, which is, as I'm reading, broken by desire to be heavenly sent. So
that sounds so British. I love Louis Capaldi. Like as a person, I love Louis Capaldi. Mm-hmm. He's a hilarious dude.
It's great. Yeah. Yeah.
Arden, what about you?
I think what you said about that's a good point. What you said about the personality, like the persona. I mean, that's a massive part. Like when I think about that, like when you consider Drake, I think he also has that going for him. And I think that's one of the reasons he's such a massive star. I mean, there's the Drake the type of guy memes. There's all these things, and all these memes and these hilarious. He's on all these shows and things. And like take a guy like Snoop Dogg. He's just a personality that's still big. I don't think he's even releasing music anymore. He's even as popular for that, but he's still such a star because of his persona. And I think that'll take a guy like Louis Capaldi a long way because he seems just like a very normal person. I mean, people see this guy. He's releasing these incredible songs, but I mean, he still eats food. He still sleeps and still walks around the block and drives a car, I'm sure. So I think that it's really inspiring for most people to see that he's just a regular guy as well.
And he's funny.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
It has to be said that he's hysterical. Like he'll go on to talk shows with comedians and he'll be the funniest man in the room.
Right.
And I think all of that, along with everything that you just said, sort of will go a long way for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. What comes to mind when you say that? Have you guys seen the clip where he Googles his net worth and he's like, where's this 10 million quid? Who has this 10 million quid?
I have not.
But
no.
But it's just something like that. And as someone who already really loves, like, obviously, like, I'm sure all of us love or just like really enjoy someone you love. Like that is, like you said, Arden, that is truly a compelling song. And his voice, you can, like, the emotion is totally palpable in his voice, which we were lauding earlier. And the addition of Maddie Healy, who kind of can like kind of disappear and pop up anywhere on the musical spectrum, I think is going to make Louis Capaldi more like a sound that's more accessible to more people, which is something that Alex and I like to talk about is how can we talk about the rise and fall of artists. We had mentioned Ray Schremer's new record, which we thought was a little like the creative decisions were a little odd. But like we lauded the fact that they tried to go like a different route. So that's something that here at Music's on the Menu, we're always keeping an eye out for. And, you guys had some awesome input with that.
For sure. And I think a guy like Matty Healy, who's been in a band sort of bereft of a scene, right? Which is something that I think is worth talking about, where bands sort of, and I'm totally aping his words, but bands kind of come out in scenes. And the 1975 like didn't have a scene. They very much were sort of their own thing. They were a sceneless band. And because of that, I think they've been malleable in a way that a lot of bands aren't. And so it'll be interesting to sort of see Healy bring that malleability to a Capaldi record. I think that will be really, really fun. It also has to be said that, if I'm not mistaken, Matt Healy wrote a song for One Direction. About 10 years ago. So he has the chops to kind of write for anyone. And he's written for Biba Doobie. He's written with Rina Sawayama. Like he's written with people on his label. So like he's written for lots of people. So it will be exciting to sort of see him. It will be exciting to sort of see him kind of take his talents to the Louis Capaldi camp. And I know that he's a controversial figure. We're only talking about his chops as
correct.
A songwriter.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Now maybe for the last 10 minutes here, we'll maybe transition over to something that both of you guys actually do have your hands in, but this is maybe a little more appealing to Arden, because now that we have Arden on the show, I think that it's worth talking about film music for a little bit.
Certainly.
So, I know that, I mean, I don't know how, like, I know that Frank, you and I talked about the new Oppenheimer film, who is the new Chris Nolan film. I'm not sure if you guys know who the composer is for that, but Arden,
it
maybe
escapes me currently.
Yeah, I mean Frank.
It's Ludwig Göransson.
He's done a bunch of stuff
with Childish Gambino. He's amazing.
He's consistently
awesome.
Yeah, does pop music as well. It's right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted you guys to maybe we just discuss some of your favorite musical scores or soundtracks of the last few years, since we have your insight here right now.
Last few years, man, that's difficult.
Onward, usually, that's a good score, eh?
I suppose so. Yes. go stream it. That'd be great. And I think that it's difficult to kind of think about that, because, of course, when you think about a score, you want to think about a film that did big. But I think there's a few things that escape me. I mean, let me think of what I've seen. If I enjoy the film, I end up enjoying the music. And it's kind of crazy how those things go together. You know, if no one sees the film, no one's going to find out about the music. I usually think Tom Newman's great. I haven't heard anything he's done in a while. All those guys. Of course, John Williams is fantastic. He's of course, getting up there. But it's I would say everything comes and goes. You know, each day something new comes out and there's a new movie and some of it's good and some of it I've yet to hear. So unfortunately, I've drawn a blank. But
I mean, yeah. I will say All Quiet on the Western Front for
that
me.
That was, yes, indeed.
It's really, really cool. Really cool combination of electronic music and like synthesizers. Mm-hmm. and a full orchestra, this really like robust sound.
That was an excellent film.
I don't know if this is like a hot take, but I thought that movie deserved the Academy Award that it received on the music front.
I thought that film was incredible. I mean, it just blew my mind in several facets. Yeah,
it's a really good movie. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of something else that I liked in terms of film music. I mean, American Beauty is my favorite score.
Yeah, that's incredible. Of
really?
Course.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
So good.
Let's just talk about scores that you guys really love.
Because
I know bringing recent scores up is kind of difficult, but like when I think of like. I obviously like Interstellar. I absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about Hans.
Interstellar. Yeah, it's kind of perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, Hans, and oh man, I'm forgetting the name of the other guy, and I don't want to.
The Splat?
No. Hans and James Newton Howard. The music for Batman Begins, as a comic book fan, will always be deeply emotional and awesome for me.
Arden, what about you?
Well,
What about scores that you just continue to go back to?
Yes, this is a bit easier, I suppose. I think Tom Newman's great, as I said. I guess I always go back to Road to Perdition, things like that. I'm a big fan of the Shawshank Redemption score.
Who's that?
I love. That is also Tom Newman. Okay. That's a fabulous film, fabulous score,
A
Mission. Ennio Morricone, one of my all-time favorites is Vertigo by Bernard Herrmann from 1959.
Yeah.
It's been some time, but it's incredible. Yeah, and just things like that, of course. But that, it goes without saying that, of course, Indiana Jones and all that is fantastic.
Yeah. Shout out John Williams, man.
Yes, and yes, indeed. I wouldn't. Unfortunately, these things escape me. But
no worries, man.
Yeah.
I would also like to say that I'm not sure if I pronounced Rina Sawayama's name correctly beforehand, but it is pronounced Sawayama. So I would like to say that.
Yeah, self-redeeming.
An incredible singer, right. And also very good in the fourth John Wick movie. Don't know if.
She can act.
She can act.
I really enjoy.
And
her
she's also like kicks ass in the movie. It's really good.
Yeah, shout out Keanu Reeves, man.
Shout out to Keanu.
Yeah, for
Olsen
real.
Olsen King.
I guess we could briefly touch back on Rena. I remember that Maddie Healy actually had like this really cool dance song with Charlie XCX.
Yes.
I forget what it was called, but they never ended up making a record, like a full EP, which was a shame. Yeah. But Yeah, there's some exciting things going on over there in England, man. At least
yeah,
in the
Dirty
mainstream.
Hit's a great label.
Yeah, and, dude,
but,
for real.
But England always, always, always is on the forefront of electronic music. It's always exciting over there. Whatever, like all the way back to like Aphex Twin in the early 90s, like everything that they do on the electronic front with like UK Garage. And I mean, even like aspects of grime music is so exciting.
Yeah.
So
yeah, shout out Dave.
I always have my eyes peeled when it comes to like, you know, the UK charts in terms of electronic stuff, because there's always going to be groundbreaking stuff coming out of those scenes over there.
Yeah. So we got 3 minutes left. And since you guys probably won't be on here again for a little bit, I think we'll, instead of playing a song to end it, we'll just chat for the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe just talk about songs that you guys have just really been recently liking in like the last week. Like, this is kind of fun. This will be funny to you guys. But yesterday I had Won't Hold You Back by Toto on repeat. I just love
great
the
song.
Harmonies
That's
of that
great,
song,
yeah.
man.
Great song. I've been listening to, I think it's called It's a Feeling off Toto 4. I can actually
right,
check
yeah.
that right now.
Dude,
but
Toto
such,
4 is so
such
good.
Such cool music. I mean, Toto 4 is like perfect.
Yeah.
Such
yeah.
cool music.
Talk about a masterpiece, huh?
Yeah, it is a masterpiece. Yeah, it is called It's a Feeling.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And then I also just heard for the first time a disco remix of Georgie Porgy by Toto.
No
and
way.
It's
wow.
awesome.
I'm
going to
need you to send me that,
went,
dude.
I will send it to you. Someone went and took the original stems, like the physical tape,
so,
and
oh,
boosted
wow.
the drums and the bass, and it sounds so good.
That's awesome.
You know, I think I've heard that. Yeah, the bottom end, I mean, of course, it's Jeff Beccaro and I think it's David Hungate. I mean, that
yeah.
talk about a rhythm section for the ages.
Yeah,
I'm familiar with the remix. I think I generally listen to that one because it's just got such a feeling and such a groove.
Oh,
it's really,
so good.
Really is awesome.
Yeah. Arden, what about you? What is the last song on your liked songs on Spotify? What's the most recent
song? Vision. It's Visions by Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Inner Versions is an awesome album.
What else?
Yes.
Keep going.
And,
I want to hear some of your songs.
And before that, it is... Okay, let me pull it up. It's Like a Tattoo by Sade. I think I'm saying that right. I've been told
it's
Sade.
Is it Sade?
Sade is so
I've been told
good.
That. Yeah, it was Like a Tattoo by Say, or forgive me, however it's said. And then here we go. Got some Aaron Copland, some old Americana music. Yes, indeed, listening to all sorts of music. And then what was I listening to? Oh, I was listening to Forget Me Nots by Patrice Rushen. It's a nice song with a funky bass part. And yes, more Aaron Copland and a little bit of U2. So
yeah.
all sorts of
shout
music.
Out Inhaler. You guys, one of you guys told me to look up Inhaler, Bono Sons
yeah,
band.
That would be me. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
That band is awesome.
That
yeah,
is
no,
I mean, that is Bono's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe is Paul. I could be wrong
yeah.
about that. Something Elijah Houston.
I think Paul is Bono.
Is Bono.
yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, he's
and
a great
with that
singer.
Guys.
You can sing.
With that,
yeah.
we'll close the episode. Just really huge thank you to Frank and Arden for helping
God,
me out
course.
With this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
hope,
absolutely.
I hope that everyone listening really enjoyed their insight all over the musical spectrum. Thanks for your musical input, Arden. Thanks for, I mean, your musical score.